Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, December 9th, 2019. South Sudan's transitional assembly speaker resigns, and South Sudan's Olympic Committee is accused of corruption. We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's transitional National Legislative Assembly Speaker has resigned following a standoff for weeks now with fellow lawmakers. Anthony Lino Makana was accused of failing to present to Parliament Auditor General reports on corruption and mismanagement and approving of a $400 million loan without permission from the Parliament. One Juba analyst says Makana should have resigned much earlier. We will have a full report on that story for you tomorrow with the Suba Memo from Juba. A South Sudanese athlete and his coach are accusing the country's National Olympic Committee and the Athletics Federation of corruption. Sprinter Thiel Deng Thiel was selected, along with a handful of other South Sudanese athletes, to travel to Japan for training ahead of the 2020 Olympic Games in Japan. But in a September 23rd letter from the Olympic Committee to the Japanese government seeking travel visas, Thiel's name was mysteriously dropped in place of another athlete. David Monodengo has the details for VOA from Juba.
In July, South Sudan's Olympic Committee signed a memorandum of understanding with the mayor of Japan's Membashi City to host and train five athletes, including their coach, ahead of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, according to documents seen by South Sudan in Focus. Marco Akol, Secretary General of the South Sudan Athletics Federation, says the initial athletes selected were three hurdlers, Lucia William, Abraham Ajok, Paralympic athlete Michael Machek, and sprinter Thiel Deng Thiel. In the Olympic Committee's September letter sent to Japan, Thiel's name was not on the list. Joseph Akon's name surfaced instead. The change prompted outrage among Thiel's fans and other sports fans across the
country. There is a corruption in South Sudan Federation because we want to do something which is right. We want to bring South Sudan up so that we can benefit. We give chance to someone who owns that position, now we can benefit. But in this style of this federation they are going on, maybe I'm going to leave running soon. If I don't go to Japan, that is the end of my running.
Speaking in Arabic, South Sudan's athletics head coach, Ali Pojulu, who recommended Thiel for the training in Japan, says the Athletics Federation wrote a letter to the Olympic Committee requesting a meeting in hopes of convincing the committee to reverse its decision. Pojulu says all South Sudan coaches know that Thiel is a better athlete than Akun, but they decided not to pursue the case because the memorandum of understanding was already signed between Japan and the National Olympic Committee. Juma Steven Lugar, president of the National Olympic Committee, says Thiel was replaced by another athlete because he did not participate in the All-Africa Games held in Rabat, Morocco in August.
We say the criteria for selection is All-African Games. So that is how that name was taken away, and the name of Joseph Akon, 400 hurdle, is the one to be inserted, because this record also is good.
Marco Akol, Secretary General of the South Sudan Athletics Federation, says Lugar is right. He is urging all South Sudanese athletes to work hard so they can one day possibly compete in the Olympics.
So even my athletes now who are in the Japan, I inform them you have to work hard to get the qualification. When you get the record, automatically you enter the system and automatically you are the one who is participate in 2020. And even now, Thiel, when he goes to Nigeria, he competes for Nigeria. If you get the record, the best record, you will be traveled.
Akon's record at the All-Africa Games is 55.88 seconds in the 400-meter race. Thiel finished in 51 seconds in the same race during the JICA competitions held in February. Speaking in Arabic, track and field fan Randa Lawrence urges South Sudan's Olympic Committee to select athletes based on their record.
We want everyone to be given the opportunity, whether in the media, in sport, in politics, or in anything else. You must be given what you deserve.
Thiel has returned to his hometown of Awil after the national athletics competition held in Wau in October. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
At least three civilians were killed and a handful of others were injured after armed civilians attacked a convoy led by Western Lake State Governor Mahmoud Salomon over the weekend. A state police spokesperson says the injured include six soldiers. Tensions are running high in the area, as we hear from Dengai Deng for VOA from Juba.
In July, South Sudan's Olympic Committee signed a memorandum of understanding with the mayor of Japan's Membashi City to host and train five athletes, including their coach, ahead of the Tokyo 2020 Olympics, according to documents seen by South Sudan in Focus. Marco Akol, Secretary General of the South Sudan Athletics Federation, says the initial athletes selected were three hurdlers, Lucia William, Abraham Ajok, Paralympic athlete Michael Machek, and sprinter Thiel Deng Thiel. In the Olympic Committee's September letter sent to Japan, Thiel's name was not on the list. Joseph Akon's name surfaced instead. The change prompted outrage among Thiel's fans and other sports fans across the
country. There is a corruption in South Sudan Foundation because we want to do something which is right. We want to bring South Sudan up so that we can benefit. We give chance to someone who owns that position, now we can benefit. But in this style of this federation they are going on, maybe I'm going to leave running soon. If I don't go to Japan, that is the end of my running.
Speaking in Arabic, South Sudan's athletics head coach, Ali Pojulu, who recommended Thiel for the training in Japan, says the Athletics Federation.
Western Lakes State Police spokesperson, Captain Elijah Mabur Makwach, says Western Lakes State Governor Solomon was leading a peace delegation to Among Ping County on Sunday when his convoy was attacked by cattle raiders at Chweya Dukan village near the state capital Rumbek.
The armed youth from Rup community went to the cattle camp called the Kitch, and they took more than 200 heads of cattle and they headed to the direction at the place called Chuey Adukan, 4 kilometers from Rumbek town. From there, when the cattle owners discovered that some of their cattle were missing, they started immediately to run after them at the direction the cattle headed to. The information reached the authorities in the state and they tried to intervene. The high delegation headed by the governor himself went there and they collided in the area.
Mabur confirmed three people were killed and six others injured, including two bodyguards of the governor.
They killed three people there and those who remained fired at the government and wounded six soldiers. Some are from police, some are from SSPDF and national security. As I am speaking to you now, the government has sent the forces to the area early in the morning at around 4 a.m. The tensions are still very high.
Western Lake State Law Enforcement Minister Mawet Manuer says state officials have been visiting villages in Among Ping County to convince civilians to refrain from violence.
Yeah, of course, even now I'm talking to you now. I'm going with.
As I am talking to you now, I am moving with the State Commissioner of Police, Deputy Governor, and Security Advisor. We are going to talk to the civilians in the area so that they don't retaliate and not to carry out any revenge. We are people of Western Lakes State and we are people of South Sudan. All these things should not happen because the national government now is following up the revitalized peace agreement, so why now killing ourselves?
Manuel says some of the injured are being treated at Rumbek Hospital. The Bishop of Awarial Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, Debbie Dakau, says peace can only be realized if civilians are disarmed.
As a church, we always encourage our national government for disarmament because most of the young people have guns, especially in our areas here. I don't know actually why there are so many guns among these young people. I am encouraging the national and state governments to come in and carry out disarmament and also encouraging the national government to bring these communities together for dialogue.
Bishop Akau is urging South Sudanese communities to come together and talk rather than resort to violence and make 2020 a year of peace and stability in the country. Last week, at least 67 people were killed and nearly 100 others wounded in fighting between the GAC and Manuer sections of the Pakam community in a lower county of Western Lakes State. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
Today is World Anti-Corruption Day, and in Kigali, delegates have opened the International Anti-Corruption Awards Summit. The Rule of Law and Anti-Corruption Center, in partnership with Qatar, presents the annual award. Qatar's government also sponsored a monument in Kigali that represents the solidarity in the fight against graft. Eugene Uimana has more from the Rwandan capital.
The monument, an imposing steel handmade out of woven metal bars that stretches upward, has become the new symbol in Kigali in the fight against corruption. The African Union says it is urgent that governments stop corruption because it multiplies African expenditures. Moussa Faki Mahamat is the chairperson of the African Union.
Donc la question de la corruption est une préoccupation majeure.
Mohamed says the issue of corruption is a major preoccupation in Africa. If you want to build a road of $100 million, it will cost three times more because of corruption, and that hurts hopes for development on the continent. The World Economic Forum reports that globally, the cost of corruption is at least $2.6 trillion, or 5% of the world's gross domestic product. The African Union estimates that annually $50 billion is embezzled out of Africa. Rwanda's President Paul Kagame says it is possible to stop corruption if the battle starts with African leaders. Kagame has made fighting corruption a key policy in his government.
This is a campaign that can be won. Tolerating corruption is a choice, not an inevitability. It is within our power to end it. That is the most important starting point. Otherwise, it would be a waste of time for us to keep talking about it.
This year's anti-corruption celebration in Rwanda is marked with the 4th Anti-Corruption Awards Summit. The Excellence Awards for those fighting corruption is named after Qatar's Emir Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani, who is in Kigali for the ceremony. Qatar's government says the award is meant to encourage more people to say no to corruption. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
At the ceremony this evening, former Zambian President Dr. Kenneth Kaunda was given the Lifetime Achievement Award for fighting corruption. Kenya's remote island of Lamu, a UNESCO World Heritage Site, is under threat, according to activists. Authorities are constructing major projects on the mainland, including a port and an oil pipeline. They also hope to build the region's first coal-fired power plant. While the infrastructure is likely to boost the local economy, some Lamu residents worry that the development and a flood of outsiders will affect the local culture and the architecture, which some say is already falling apart. Rurud Elmendorp reports from Lamu.
We're in the narrow streets of Lamu in Kenya, where cars don't fit and donkeys are the main mode of transport. The remoteness of the island has helped maintain its 650-year-old Swahili culture and traditions. But locals worry construction of a new port, oil pipeline and transport links on the mainland will bring more outsiders to settle in Lamu and change the unique culture. Abu Bakr Badawi is with the century-old Riada Mosque.
We are trying our best to prevent that kind of intervention or sort of the kind of new development so that we can preserve the Lamu.
Authorities say the 26 billion group of projects will improve economic links between Kenya, South Sudan and Ethiopia and create thousands of jobs. But a Kenyan court in June halted construction of a coal-fired power plant that was to help fuel the projects, encouraging opponents. Raya Famau Ahmed is an activist opposed to the coal plant.
We as Lamu people are afraid because when people come from other areas, they come with many things. Their own language, their own culture, I mean their own way of living. And this might alter the cultural way that people have been living.
Activists worry the projects could also affect Lamu Town's unique antique character. More than a third of Lamu's historic buildings are already falling apart, says Athman Hussein of the National Museums of Kenya.
Some of the owners do not want any kind of intervention. They think perhaps by putting money into their building, perhaps you are actually owning it, you are taking over that particular building. So it's a very complex kind of thing.
Lamu authorities vow they will protect the island's world heritage from the development projects. Fahima Arafat is with the Lamu County government.
We have also put measures to ensure that the LAPSET activities will remain on the mainland of Lamu, that is Hindi area, Mokowe and the likes. And that's the Lamu Archipelago, that is Lamu Island, starting from Shela all the way to Kipungani, remains with its status of heritage.
Lamu authorities say they are raising funds to help renovate historic buildings and develop the economy with tourism as a major pillar. At the risk of commercializing their culture, some argue that bringing in more tourists may actually help keep Lamu's unique traditions alive. Ruth Almendorp for VOA News, Lamu, Kenya.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new effort is launched to cut off illegal migration through Sudan to Europe. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best gift you have ever received from a friend?
Being genuine and real. I love friends that are real. I think that's the best gift they could ever give me.
I received an iPad from my friend. It was at a time when I had just entered university, and then I got that as a gift, so it was very helpful.
The best gift I have received is an academic book back in high school by a friend who was always first in class, and the book talked about how to be a good student, and it really helped me to be a good student.
Be inspirational books, because it motivates me and it makes me enlighten no more what is life all about.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The African Union has established a center in Sudan with the aim of blocking illegal migration to Europe. An expert on African development describes Sudan as a main transit route for many African youth trying to reach the European continent and find a better life. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Thousands of illegal migrants, mostly Africans, choose to cross the Mediterranean Sea towards Europe by way of Libya, as the country has been mired in insecurity and chaos ever since the fall of its former leader Muammar Gaddafi in 2011. General Awad Anil Dahia, a retired Sudanese police officer who has been in charge of the illegal migration department in Sudan for several years, says many young Africans leave their home countries due to insecurity and economic hardships, including high unemployment.
Some of them are also based on the ambition of the youth, because they want to see something better than what they are seeing at home, And so if they are not getting actually the easy way actually to go, they will try the other way. So I think that is one of the pushing factors. But mainly, you can say, let us say, the insecurity factor.
Dahia says the history of long civil wars in Horn of Africa countries such as Somalia, Ethiopia, Sudan and South Sudan have contributed to the exodus of thousands of youth who illegally travel to Europe and find a better life. He says illegal migration centers in Libya registered more than 9,000 illegal migrants in 2015. He says that number increased to 15,000 the following year. He says that number dropped significantly last year due in part to a joint efforts by security organizations in the region to block new and old roads used by illegal immigrants.
Sometimes because there's a change of routes, maybe some other dynamics, political dynamics in Libya. Sometimes it's by accident can come because I realize that they change the route using also Egypt. So it is a lot of dynamism here in this kind.
Dahia says lack of coordination and capacity building among security organs in the region in previous years meant illegal migration continued. He says he hopes Sudan's new research center will help the country's leader draft laws and develop strategic techniques to block illegal migration. Yasir Muhammad El-Ibeit, an expert on African development who has worked for IGAD, says the influx of migrant youth has contributed to human trafficking around the continent. El-Ibeit says African leaders need to support this center so that human traffickers and other illegal groups can be dismantled. He says the center should help minimize African youth migration and human trafficking on the continent.
We have seen all the institutions in Sudan, they are ready on that, together like police, like police force, like rabbit force and an army, and plus the other, like Minister of Justice. So they are all ready to fight these problems now.
El-Ibeit says many migrants use Sudan as a transit route to cross into Egypt, Libya, Morocco, and other North African countries, but the center should help put an end to that. The head of Sudan's immigration department, General Osman Kabashi Juma, says officials have already identified thousands of foreign nationals who have entered Sudan illegally and are hosted within communities in the border towns of Kassala, Al-Gadarif, Al-Fashir and Al-Janena. Speaking in Arabic, Juma vowed to cooperate with the center and possibly deport illegal migrants to their home countries.
We are counted among hosted countries that do not register illegal foreigners. Most of them are hosted within families, and this has put Sudan to be a soft ground for transit route of many victims of human trafficking. They do rest here and then they plan their way towards Europe.
According to the report by the International Organization for Migration published in October 2018, there are more than 600,000 illegal migrants in Libya. Early this month, Libyan authorities deported 140 illegal immigrants to Sudan and Chad who had tried to cross the Mediterranean Sea to Europe. For VOA News, I am Michael Atiit in Khartoum.
Authorities in neighboring Uganda say the death toll from a week of floods and mudslides has risen to 36 and has left thousands stranded after more heavy rains. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
A week of heavy rains caused floods and mudslides in eastern Uganda's Bugisu and Bundibugyo regions near Rwenzori Mountain. Authorities say the flooding has taken a toll with the loss of life and property and with thousands more left stranded. The Ugandan Red Cross's Irene Nakasita says search and rescue operations in the regions are hampered as most roads have been washed away.
And the decision has been taken to put up a transit shelter until the situation normalizes. So most likely, Bubukwang Transit Center is going to house close to 700 people who are displaced in Bundibugyo.
Meanwhile, Ugandan State Minister for Disaster Preparedness and Relief, Musa Echweru, says there are concerns about waterborne disease outbreaks in flood-affected areas.
Now, the risk a risk of contamination of water. And if that is not handled well, then we're going to risk another phase of a challenge, an outbreak of cholera, which will compound our humanitarian intervention.
HRO says the government has released $5.4 million for emergency drugs to treat waterborne diseases, inflatable boats, taps, blankets, food, and repairing bridges. Ugandan authorities say the flooding is expected to recede in January as the weather improves. Scientists have long warned that rising ocean temperatures are making seasonal rains more severe and more frequent. The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, UN OCHA, last week, December 4th, said unusually heavy rainfall and flooding in East Africa has affected over 2.8 million people and left at least 280 dead. UN OCHA said the unusually heavy rainfall was driven by the differences in sea surface temperature between western and eastern areas of the Indian Ocean. The UN office said rains were expected to diminish in the weeks ahead, but heavy rains would likely persist into December and intensify in Kenya, Tanzania, and Uganda. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
Zimbabwe's water problems are escalating amid a grinding drought, which has left millions food insecure and caused the deaths of thousands of animals. For VOA, Addie Gondo has more on that story.
Bulawayo's water woes are set to worsen after the local authority decommissioned the Umzingwane Dam a few days ago. In June, Bulawayo City Council BCC decommissioned the Upper Nema Dam, and the local authority is now left with four supply dams instead of the normal of six. And the four dams are just 36% full. The city council says it continues to face challenges with pumping due to electricity cuts. Earlier on, the city council introduced 72-hour water cuts for most of the city. Mandla Chuma, a resident of Mganwini Township in Bulawayo's western area, vents his frustration.
We are supposed to be having 4 days without water. In terms of water shedding, what I can say is that we no longer pay attention to whatever city council tells us in terms of the days when they're going to be shedding. So all we do is to wake up early in the morning, open the tap to see if there's running water. So what happens now, I just use a 2-liter container to do my bathing, because it can go even for days. The whole week, most of the time, there will be no water.
Chuma says residents used to rely on tanks or bowser supplied by council, which have gone dry. Now they've had to rely on alternative sources.
But at the boreholes there, there's overcrowding. People can queue for water in the morning up to 10 p.m. So the situation is so dire. We don't know what happened to their bowsers. Before, they used to bring bowsers, but I have never seen them for quite some time.
Zimbabwe's economy has declined sharply in the past 2 years. The country faces shortages of currency, fuel, and imported goods such as medicine and machinery. The prolonged drought has added to the problems, particularly because the country relies on hydropower for much of its electricity, and in some areas, rivers are too low to power turbines. The city council warns residents and stakeholders that the decommissioning of Umzingwane will cut the flow of raw water to 95 megaliters a day. That's against the current daily average consumption of 131.6 megaliters. While council has said that companies in the industrial areas have been spared the water cuts, business owners report their taps are running dry. Ernest Marima, a business operator in Entumbane Township, says something urgent needs to be done.
We have to rely on bowser water and borehole water from elsewhere. So I would say it's actually, it makes it more expensive to run the same business.
Marima thinks the solution needs to be a national one through the Zimbabwe National Water Authority, ZINWA, which has the mandate to sustainably develop and manage the country's water resources.
What needs to happen is to pump water from Nyamandlovu. It's a rainy season now, so the water table will go up, the dams will get a bit of water. It pumps it straight into your reservoir. That Magwegwe Reservoir up there, Magwegwe Reservoir, pump into that place.
ZINWA also runs 534 treatment plants that supply potable water to small towns, rural service stations, and growth points. It has been cash-strapped due to the economic downturn. The national authority did not respond to requests for comment. For now, council says it is working to increase the pumping from the Nyamandlovu boreholes and for the Zimbabwe Electricity Transmission Distribution Company to speed up the reinstallation of power lines that were blown down by storm winds 2 weeks ago. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
That's our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Amba Patalipa by Kulipapa. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Amba yeye pagilipa
Nirona rudongo, nirona rudongo, nirona rudongo kubona amba
Amba yeye, amba yeye pagilipa
Ngalaga kuden amba bero Ku amba langodi kiko Ngajikine mindo lenga beri